Thank you, Vaughn, for bringing us Headlines Lagos. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, and you're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Now, of course, what will the post-subsidy era mean for Nigerians at the pump? It's a question I started asking yesterday, and it's a question I'm asking yet again today. The 2023 federal budget made provision for petrol subsidy until the end of June. I'm sure that that's a conversation on most people's minds. What that means is that money has been voted and allocated to provide petrol at the fixed pump price for 24 more days. But NNPC has raised prices because they say that they haven't seen that money yet. It's one of the issues that we touched on yesterday. It's one of the issues that we'll talk a bit about today as well. So we seem to be having audio issues. My guest, who's joining us via Zoom, seems to be unable to hear me. So we will take a very quick break and figure out what's happening with the sound, and then we will come back Lagos live on the show. Again, I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. Don't go away.
This is The Voice Note on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
You know, it echoed in this room.
Look, hello, can you hear me?
I go back a long way. You've done phenomenally well. About 2 decades, done phenomenally well. Jim, Mike Adenuga and co. Let me tell you what they all have in common. They are all very combative personalities. Because of that, no regulator will go to them and try nonsense. Because most of them know how to deal with that regulator. We have to move beyond that, making Nigeria an economy only for the few people who are very combative. Some of us too are combative enough, so people know what's in regulation. Now, let me continue, because those we are destroying are the 22-year-old entrepreneurs, the 25-year-old entrepreneurs. This economy is rigged against the youth, and it's not going to grow. When Aliko and I were 30, we were allowed to grow. Today, we're killing the youth from growing. So it's not going to grow. That's the point I'm making. And the reason, the things we have to correct, you see, any regulator that wants to get applause, just go after some people, destroy some businesses, and the more you destroy, the more they hail you. It's even proof that you're working. That's a paradigm shift. We have to get out of that complete nonsense. Without that, it will negate any monetary policy and everything else.
This is The Voice Note on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
It was why we sang and danced in the night, why we lit fires that burned through the night, why we chose a flag colored in freedom, for now we would be kings in this, our kingdom. But our first head of state was Igbo, and the next, though a soldier, also Igbo. Then Angas ruled, followed by Hausa, and then came the turn of Yoruba. Then Hausa came back for a term cut short, when power was taken by an Hausa gunshot. Then Gwari claimed his turn to rule, but a mandate stolen was his downfall. Then Kanuri came, and it's quite probable that he'll still be ruling if not for that apple. Then Yoruba returned, not once, but twice. Then Hausa returned, but died in peace. Then he left us a while to worry and wonder. When it was over, Ijo had power, and after him came that titanic shift. And now we can see that Hausa is back, leaving me with this troublesome thought: where in all this is my own president? For where I was born is not where I'm from, and where I'm from is not my home. So when the tribe gather, I often wonder, who will I fight when you're both my brothers? Nobody asked when we were children. Before we play, are you a Muslim? We shared a space that nobody claimed, but now you ask me to choose a side. When we were students, nobody asked if North and South could share a desk, if East and West could study together, but now you tell me that I'm a stranger. Stranger, yes, to these ways of thinking. Thinking that tribe is everything. The Niger and Benue, they meet in my hand. I'm not an indigene, but this is my land. And this is my language, I speak nothing else. My home is here, I know nothing else. My tribe is my nation, I am nothing else, and this is my country. I have nowhere else. And so, though people are quick to assure me, to tell me this country I live in is free, deep in my heart, I know that freedom, my freedom, is yet to come. When no one will question my origin, when no one will call me a non-indigene, when no one will kill me because of my faith, when no one will cheat me because of my state, when my state will be wherever I live and will change whenever I choose to move, the day I find not a Nigerian president, but that a Nigerian is finally president. And so, while the flag of ethnicity still flutters over this land of two shining rivers and the tribes take their turn to misgovern my country, I look to the future, for I'm not yet free.
Apologies about that quick break. We had to sort out technical issues we were having. But yes, I am Sandra Ezekwesili. This is Hard Facts. And let's talk about what the post-subsidy era will mean for you at the pump. It's a conversation we started yesterday. We had an oil and gas industry expert on the show with us, a lawyer in the oil and gas sector with us on the show yesterday, Ade Oye Adefulu. And today we have somebody who is a corporate governance, risk management, and compliance implementation expert. He spent many years in the oil and gas sector, including a very successful stint at Sahara Group. Uwade Ahimie, good to have you on the show. Welcome to Hard Facts.
Good evening. Hi, how are you? Hi. Great to be on your show.
Yes, good evening. Lagos, of course, you can join the conversation 0700-993-993-993. I know you have questions. I know you have opinions about this subject. So feel free to share them with Uwade. You can also call us women on 01465-7190. Uwade, in a situation where we have already budgeted money for subsidy up until June, what could possibly be the reason for federal government not paying the NNPC like the NNPC MD Mele Kyari is alleging?
A couple of things. One, let's understand that a budget is a provision, and being a provision means that you believe that you're going to spend that money. However, if you don't have the money to spend, then you can't spend it despite the fact you budgeted it. And this is, I think, what the issue is. And as you listened to the MD of NNPC, I think a few days ago, this was the same thing he was saying. The government hasn't written a check to them. And if they've not written a check, then your provision at the end of the day is not being monetized, because it takes money for you to do the transaction. And if the government is saying, I don't have this money to give to you, then you must find alternative ways to fund your cash flow, which I think is the major issue now. And that is why NNPC brought out a price list for the beginning of a deregulated market, which I think is the best thing for Nigeria going forward.
In a situation like that, where the government and a corporation have a deal to provide a public good at a set price in return for a subsidy payment, what steps should the corporation take if the government does not pay in time? Shouldn't ending the subsidy be their first step, or are there measures in place for arbitration and mediation?
Well, so the first step is, let's even have money. Let's be liquid for us to do business. That's the first step, which is then let's yank out the subsidy, which is what has happened. The second step is now to go to arbitration and say, okay, government, you still owe us this. When are you going to pay? How are you going to pay so that we can work it out into our cash flow and then let the dynamics of supply and demand start to take its place. That's the second step. The third step is saying, okay, government don't have this money to give us now. Government says, I can't pay in the next 1 year. The next question is, how do I fund my cash flow? Then I would need to go either to the banks or for the case of NNPC, which is a limited liability company. And you heard that over time, they would probably float them on the stock market, go to the market and try and raise capital towards either going to the bank to raise financing or go to the market to raise capital towards funding your projects, your cash flow, and then making the system and oiling the system so that the engine is working well.
You know, the Senate set up a committee last year to ascertain just how many liters of fuel Nigerians are actually consuming. And last month, the committee told us that they couldn't come up with an answer. They say that there is currently no way to track and report our actual fuel consumption nationwide. My first question is this true?
Not completely. So you might not be able to ascertain what goes finally to the end user, but you should be able to ascertain what went out of the whether the depots or whoever is bringing it into the petrol station. And that, I think we have the data for, at least there's data. I know that there's data from 2010 to 2019. If you go to the regulatory website, you would find some data relating to how petroleum products are trucked out from depots all over the country, across the country. So you would get that. But between 2020 and 2022, it's been difficult to ascertain that. The data for 2010 to 2019 is readily available. If you go to the website of the National Bureau of Statistics, you would see that there. I did an analysis on that a few days ago on an article I did on Nairometrics. So you would find that. But the bottom line in Nigeria is we don't have data to chase hard facts. And this is the time for us to start, you know, reset the button so that we can start to acquire data. And what does it mean to acquire data? When you let the market dynamics start to play out, what then happens is you are not going to bring in what you cannot sell. And also, your supply will be dependent on what the demand is in the market. And if the demand for petrol, for instance, is lower than what you are supplying, it means that you have a glut, meaning that you have too much petrol in the country, the demand is low, supply is high, and the dynamics of economics of supply, demands of and supply will kick in. So I just need to sell so that I can, at whatever price, so that I can break even, get new products, and understand the market, how it works in terms of demand and supply. Or people will find alternatives. If you look at the issue, when you look at diesel, for instance, when diesel went up to about 800, 850, organizations started looking for alternative ways to cut costs. Either you reduce hours of working, some went into alternative power sources towards augmenting what comes from the national power grid, and so on and so forth. So at the end of the day, we should let the oil and gas downstream and midstream, let the forces of demand and supply determine what comes in, what goes out. And then you find out at the end of the day, even some of the players in Nigeria will start to export some of these products as you go on, because you would get the needed investment, not just locally, but also from international investors. And for me, Nigeria is a great hub when you look at the coastline, the size of the population of West Africa, even the population of East Africa, Central Africa, the landlocked countries. How do you maximize and optimize the resources, the natural resources that you have? And this, for me, is a good move.
Okay. 99.3 Lagos. Give us a call on 0700-993-993-993-01465-7190. Now, from all you've said, the removal of subsidy is a good move. The deregulation of petrol is a good move. But are there guardrails that the subsidy program had? What guardrails, if any, did the program have? In what ways did government try to stop it from getting too expensive? How did they attempt to prevent fraud?
Well, I can't speak to that in terms of how government worked towards preventing fraud. But mm-hmm. one of the things I know that is done is at every point at which a ship that brings in a product comes into Nigeria. Mm-hmm. The regulatory bodies, the independent supervisors as nominated by the regulatory bodies and the owners of the product are there to check and confirm. Documentation is signed. Mm-hmm. If you go to the regulatory commission, the ones that regulate petroleum downstream, the NSDA, DPR, you would find out that there are documentations for a number of all the... And those documentations are submitted. Are they correct? I can't speak to that, because if people connive, and that's a different thing entirely. If people do connive and try and bend the system to favor them, then it means that the regulatory body, those who are in charge of regulating that system, must be able to dictate, and there must be processes in place to dictate that. But I do know that there are processes for you to bring in products, for you to check the quantity, for you to transship them, even in transshipment from whether it's the big vessels to smaller vessels to carry them into the depot. And even when you move them by trucking, there is a process. You take out 33,000 liters, there's a weigh bill, it's checked, your meters run the 33,000 into the truck, it's delivered at the petrol station, you check and confirm. So those processes are there. Are they being flouted by those within the process flow? That I can't speak to.
Okay, let's come to Lagos now. 99.3, hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, what's your name, sir?
My name is Emmanuel, I'm calling from Ogba.
Emmanuel from Ogba, welcome. Talk to me.
Yes, thank you very much for the program.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just want to ask your guest in the studio, talking about subsidy removal, I thought there should be some measures in place. Now, my first question is this. I thought there should be a body like other countries who are in charge of this pricing so that it doesn't go like in Abuja, it is 800 naira, in Lagos, it is 500 naira or whatever. That's number one question. And number two question is that if it took Dangote and some other maybe of his partners to build a refinery within 3 years or thereabouts, why can't, I thought by now we should have new refineries in place, at least one. That will cover, a larger chunk of whatever we use. You understand that by the time they remove this subsidy, it can be easier for Nigerians to bear. The pain is too much, I tell you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You know, that final question is a question I've gotten so many times. It's an argument, it's a debate that I've had on this show so many times. I keep saying refineries will not solve this problem, and Lagos pushes back. Refineries will solve this problem. Wade, what do you think?
Okay, so two things. So the first one is looking at the price dynamics of petrol. So whether you're refining in Nigeria or you're bringing it in a vessel after it's been refined outside Nigeria in another refinery, we must remember that there is a cost for buying the crude that is being refined. For every barrel of crude, you get about 73 liters of petrol. And so what will be the cost of that, the cost of production, or the cost of processing to get petrol out of the crude? That's the main cost. Now, there are other ancillary costs that you're going to look at. So you have to... charges. You're going to pay maritime charges. You're going to pay insurance. And a number of all those things cost. It's like I said, it's demand and supply. So I need to start looking at where are the inefficiencies within the system. So once that is clearly understood, you would find out that at the end of the day, at the point at which we reaches the tank farm in Nigeria, there's a cost that has been brought into it. So whoever is going to sell is now going to look at it. Where am I trucking to? How much is it going to cost me to move it from one point to the other? Within Lagos, it might be cheaper. And even in some places within Lagos, let me give an example. If you have a tank farm in Apapa and you're moving product from a depot in Apapa to a petrol station in Apapa, it's not going to be the same cost of moving that petrol to Oshodi. So you could find out as we go on, and this is what I envisage, is that you could get to a petrol station in Oshodi and the pump price is 450 naira and in Apapa is 445 naira, because all these costs are all ancillary towards ensuring that it goes towards the consumer at the end of the day. And so once you understand all those things, and let's remember now, there's an exchange rate issue. If we have a dichotomy in exchange rates, so CBN rate as at today is 460, 461, parallel market rate is 750 on the average. So at what price are you bringing in the product? At what price are you buying from a refinery after it has produced? Because remember, the refinery is buying crude and buying it in dollar denomination.
In
using
dollars,
the dollar mm-hmm. as, yeah, using the dollar as a denomination of costing.
Mm-hmm.
So, at what exchange rate are you going to do that? If we can, and like you heard the president say, moving towards a single rate, there's never a single rate anywhere in the world. Let's get that. But there is a standard rate that institutions or lending, those who want to do business, would agree to put money or investment into a country. Now, if it's the same way you go, you travel abroad, you get to an to an airport, you could find out that you exchange your dollars for pounds, for instance, within the same airport perimeter. There is a difference in exchange rates. It could be 1 pence, it could be 2 pence, it could be less than that. And these are the things that we need to look at. So when you create that efficiency within the system, what then happens is that everybody who is bringing it in starts to look at, what are the opportunities for me? Where do I want to have my base? What are the logistics I have to contend with? And then that takes us to the second part of that question. What is the infrastructure that has been provided either by the person who is bringing it in towards his tank farm or his pipelines, and the government in moving this thing? So freeing up that money, letting people sell at the price at which you say, okay, this is your profit and we can get the taxes out of it, and then we can put it into this infrastructure development. Then you now start to have a market that is determined by demand and supply. On the second part of refining, yes, we could build a refinery in 3 years. Dangote refinery took him 10 years to build. Started in 2013, he's only just commissioned it or finished it technically without production starting. Production is expected to start in July. First and foremost, what's the quantity of crude that you require for Nigeria's consumption? When you look at the analysis, you know, as at the end of 2022, NNPC says about 93 million liters a day. The regulatory body says about 68 million. If you take an average, let's say 77 million consumption in a day, you need approximately about 1.05 barrels a day to produce the petrol that you require for Nigeria. Now, Dangote is not going to, he's not going to sell it to you, except government is paying him a subsidy. So he's going to sell it at market price. Otherwise, it goes somewhere else. This has the coastline to be.
Okay, we seem to be having connectivity issues with Owade there. That's my cue to come back to Lagos, where I'm sure we have several comments coming in via social media. And then, of course, when we have Owade rejoin us, I also want to talk a bit about the amount of money that has already gone into the refineries that currently exist, and I think that's what Owade was also trying to address before we lost the connection to him there. We'll take a break. When we come back from this break, Lagos, let's talk a bit more about refineries, about subsidy removal, about what that means for you, what that means for all of us going forward, and what do you think about what you're hearing from our guest on today's show, because I also want to hear what you think about some of the insights that he's been sharing about this subject matter. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. I have had on the show with me a corporate governance, risk management and compliance implementation expert who has spent many years in the oil and gas sector, including at Sahara Group, Owade Ahimie. We'll take a break. When we come back, Lagos, let's keep talking. Lagos, I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. And today we are talking about what post-regulation will look like for you. What will the post-subsidy era mean for Nigerians at the pump? My guest is a corporate governance, risk management and compliance implementation expert who spent many years in the oil and gas sector. Owade Ahimie has been talking to us about some of the questions that we have on the subject. If you missed the first half of this segment, you can definitely catch it again on our website or on any platform where you stream podcasts. Simply search for Hard Facts with Sandra Ezekwesili. That's my name. That's who I am. Now, we've got lots of questions from social media, and I want to try and take as many of them as possible. Yemi from Ayobo. Oh, Yemi, thank you for your concern. Yes, I do have a cold. We've got this message from Femi in Ikorodu. Femi says, Now, there's a huge trust deficit issue between the leaders and the led in Nigeria. That's why citizens don't trust those in public office. How does NNPC explain the term deregulation when they are still fixing fuel price? I think deregulation should throw the market open for those who are capable of importing fuel to do so and create competitive prices and market. And if NNPC Limited claims to be limited, why are their shares not quoted on NSE for investors to buy and stop being under the control or influence of a sitting government in order to show transparency? This country is being run like a secret cult where everything is shrouded in secrecy. No country makes progress in this manner. Femi from Ikorodu with that message. Did you say wow while I was reading that message, Uwade?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Yes, there is a huge trust deficit, but we should also start to understand what the role of NNPC will be post-deregulation. NNPC can't have more than 30% of the market, meaning that 70% of the market would definitely need to be filled, you know, by other oil marketers, the major marketers, the independent marketers. So what you would see is, you would start seeing business people do business and look at what are the inefficiencies within the system and trying to plug those inefficiencies to make products come available and accessible at all times. And there's nobody who is going to put money into supplying what the market is not demanding. So the market cannot be demanding 10 things and I'm supplying 100. You know, it doesn't work. And that's one. Two, and I agree that NNPC is still the sole supplier of petrol into Nigeria. This has to end, and it has to end quickly. So in putting out that framework, I expect that by the end of June, those things will be thrown open. Also looking at the fact that there needs to be a consensus on how the exchange rate is going to trade against dollar, because for now, until Dangote, even if, when Dangote starts to refine product, there's no guarantee that they are going to sell to the NNPC if they can pay. Because NNPC, despite the fact they are shareholders, they are also a company that needs to run a business. And then secondly, when you say, why are they not listed on the exchange? First and foremost, it's a private limited liability company, which is owned by the federal government. And as you go on, like you saw what you saw in power, investments could be sold so that they could raise money towards actually running the company as a company. And when that is being done, what you find is that they need to pay dividends. They need to see that investors' money into the projects that you say they want to do are being carried out. So I do believe, yes, there's a trust deficit, but I do believe that if you let NNPC run as a private company the way it should run and pay its taxes the way every other company pays its taxes and provide services, we would get where we're going, and that's the reality for me. It's a reality.
But is NNPC a private company if it is still owned by the federal government and still has special concessions that other private companies don't have?
When you look at the PIA, there is no specific special concession. What he has said is that NNPC should be able to guarantee that at every point in time, meaning that they have to go and look for money to trade. And let's also remember that NNPC has different arms. They will trade on the downstream, they will trade in the midstream, mm-hmm. because they have access to depots. Mm-hmm. They will trade in the upstream because they are the representative of the joint ventures. And that's the reality. There's nowhere in the world that says government cannot own shares in a company. Mm-hmm. All the power companies, government owns about 40% of the shares, but they are still trading like businesses. They are run by people who want to make money for the business, mm-hmm. Who want to provide service. And that's how we must look at NNPC going forward.
Could this deregulation, this removal, could it have been done gradually by increasing the pump price every few weeks and stretch the money that was budgeted, but you know, we haven't decided whether we'll spend it or not, one way or the other? Could we have done that and stretched it out for like a year? Would that gradual increase have gotten better economic and social results than a single sharp drop off a cliff in the middle of a year?
Probably, but like they say, when is the best time? The best time is always now, you know. We'll continue to push it. You'll continue to complain. Other marketers will not be able to get into that market because they are still the government is still going to be responsible for fixing prices, and so on and so forth. If that continues, how long do we want to continue? We see that by the end of the last administration, our debt servicing was 112% of our revenues. So how do you want to do that? We already have local debts of close to 40-something trillion, foreign debts of another 20-something trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't even service the debts. We need to borrow to service the debts. Because if I'm earning 100 naira and I'm paying a loan that is 112 naira, it means, Sandra, I need to come and borrow money, 12 naira from you,
mm-hmm.
to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And so for how long do I want to live like that? Rather than just saying, you know what, I know I can get money from somewhere, yank off that thing, sell it, pay off the loan, and let's restart. I understand the trust deficit, but we must give the incoming administration, and that, this is my opinion, the opportunity. Because when you look at all the candidates who campaign for the election, presidential, for the parties for the election, everybody, he was in agreement, fuel subsidy had to go, and he had to go like yesterday.
Let's talk about refineries now. The average Nigerian believes that refineries are the answer, that refineries solve our problems. Do you think so?
They should solve our problems. However, you must run a refinery like a business. You must run the refinery as a business. If you don't, Dangote is not going to pay lip service to, oh, I refine the crude and I want to buy diesel. And the cost of giving it out, are you with me? The cost of production,
mm-hmm.
he would sell at a lower price. It can work. He has loans to pay. And this is what we've suffered over time. For me, like I always say, and a number of people will tell me, I was at a session sometime over the weekend and someone from public sector was saying it. Government has no business in doing business.
Mm-hmm.
Government can invest in those who want to run businesses,
mm-hmm.
and get and you know, share out of the profits, which comes as additional revenue to them.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? Create the enabling environment for people not to become monopolies. At the end of the day, for me, this is the beginning of good things in the refining area.
Mm-hmm.
Government should sell off the refineries that we have to those who can run businesses. First and foremost, you will get some inflow of money.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, those who will buy them already have a space of where they can modernize the refinery. I know of a country that started off...
Apologies about that. Go ahead. Apologies about that. Continue.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so I know of a country, a West African country, had 30,000 barrels a day, up 30 to 60,000, and is now 100,000. The refinery is run as a business. It makes is the most lucrative arm for the petroleum, for the government in the petroleum sector. And government pays. Believe me, they pay the price at which it is being refined and being sold into the market. It's demand and supply. So once we do that, I know that there's another refinery being built somewhere in the South. We should create that enabling environment. We should build. Nigeria has one of the best infrastructure system when it comes to the downstream. We have tank farms across Nigeria. We have a pipeline system that was state of the art when it was built. What are we doing with that? How do you ensure government should look at even the PPMC? How do you come to, you know, working with those who will run it efficiently? I give you an example. Saudi Aramco just sold off his pipeline system to some people who are going to manage it for $12.4 billion recently. That's what we should be looking at. First, you get that money in. Government gives you the enabling environment for you to be able to fix those things, expand on them. And then you'll find out that investors within localities, within the states will start to attract the kind of investments that you want. So what stops Dangote refining, pumping it through a pipeline system that is already a network in Nigeria, and then within the ones that go to Sokoto State, for instance, You have tank farms being built around them so that people can get enough product into the system. People can get them as quickly as possible, and so on and so forth. So we must let the dictates of demand and supply run the downstream economy. I mean, industry, like it's done in most parts of the world, where you find out that, I'm sure if you go to the UK, you can't buy petrol from the same company that has petrol stations on the same road at the same price.
Now you have those who say, I like that you keep using the Dangote refinery example, right? So Dangote himself has spoken in the past about the refinery selling its petrol in the international market. He wants both the forex and the grid prices that these things will offer, right? We've also heard Mili Kiari say that Dangote's petrol will not affect the prices we're currently seeing. But you have those who say that Dangote Refinery should sell its fuel at lower prices since there won't be landing costs.
So the cost of selling the fuel, first and foremost, it should bring about cheaper pricing, lower pricing. Don't get me wrong.
Mm.
It could be higher, but it's all dependent on how much is Dangote buying crude that he's refining and what will be the end cost of production. Let's always remember that.
What
because
concessions?
Dangote is not only going to...
What concessions?
Dangote is not...
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Go ahead.
Dangote is not only going to buy crude from Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to buy from across the world. Mm-hmm. And then he will look at his mix of cost.
Okay.
And then look at his weighted average cost of production.
Okay. What concessions did he receive from the federal government for the refinery? Do those concessions translate to an obligation for him to sell petrol cheaper?
No. The concessions that you would get, you would have access to buying crude for that refinery. Is he going to... NNPC sells its crude to those who buy crude from it at the market price, international market price.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see them doing the same thing, nor doing any other thing different to Dangote or to anybody who builds a new refinery. For those who have the licenses to build refineries, for building refineries and they build them, I don't see it being different.
Mm.
And the, like I said, based on the statistics that is available today or the data that is available today,
mm-hmm.
it would require about 1.05 million barrels of crude each day. Dangote is only 650,000.
Mm-hmm.
We have a capacity of 445,000 that has not worked in God knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is NNPC willing to sell it or go into a joint venture for those who are going to make it work and get access to it? So even sourcing the crude, I don't necessarily have to source crude from Nigeria if I can get better pricing from the international market. So it will reflect on a number of things. It will reflect on, one, where am I getting the crude from? It will reflect on producing it in Nigeria. It should come out cheaper when it gets to the station because I'm not paying, landing costs. I might probably pay some duties to move them. Then to truck them out to go to the depots, that cost would also be there. And those are the... So when if we have 3-4 refineries refining in Nigeria, we will be able to, one, definitely if I have a refinery within the context of my country
mm-hmm.
and they can produce and meet the demand, it would definitely be cheaper than when I sell the product outside to even Benin or Togo or Ghana. It will be. But it doesn't mean that Dangote is going to give us a discount when he's paying international market prices for buying crude.
Do you think that it would make a difference in how much people buy PMS if perhaps we had other ports in other regions across Nigeria away from Lagos? Because I was thinking about what you said earlier on about the cost of transporting the product from one point C to the other, right? And I would imagine that because of Nigeria's poor road infrastructure, rail infrastructure as far as cargo is concerned, it adds to the cost of the cost of paying for fuel in say Rivers or Enugu or Delta as the case may be. Is this a problem that ports could solve?
So a plethora of problems that, aside from, when I say logistics, and I mean every part of logistics, mm-hmm. the train system, the road system, the waterway system. Let me give a typical example. Like I said, I know that there is an organization that is building a refinery. I think it's 200,000 in somewhere in the South. If they start to refine that product, crude, and they get enough petrol out of the crude, or even more than enough, it would supply the market within the South and the Southeast, it would technically be cheaper because it's the cost of crude is determinant of, and all the other things that you put into play in terms of production, you know, and that's it. The cost of crude is the highest part of it. So you look at the labor, you look at the other expenditure that goes into it. Once we have those, then you like I said, you would have people who are willing, are you with me, mm-hmm. to move products within the waterways. We have the River Niger, we have the River Benue. This is what government should be focusing on. How do we dredge them for them to carry the, whether it's the small size, whether it's the 5,000 metric ton barges or the 10,000 metric ton barges, so that we can move these products across place. The second part of it is, like I said earlier, is the PPMC. We have one of the best pipeline networks in the world. What I think is required is one, refurbishment, complete overhaul of the system. The pipes are small. You need to increase the sizes of the pipes and so on and so forth. NNPC has depots in practically every geopolitical region in Nigeria. Let them run the business. Look for people who are going to work with them. Put those monies into it. And believe me, if NNPC spends $1 billion to renovate all those things and the price of its petrol comes out at for instance, 500 naira, and someone can import it and bring it to the shores of Nigeria and bring it into the country and take it into Sokoto, for instance, and that Sokoto is selling, NNPC is selling at 500 and he can sell it at 495 naira. Believe me, NNPC is going to be running at a loss. And these are the things that we must be patient about. In my opinion, I do think that this present administration wants to get these things done. Sincerity of purpose is something else for me. We would start to see the framework. I hear, you know, he's they've given an approval for some of his advice or some of the president's advisors. Now it's now let him settle down and put the framework once the next National Assembly comes in. So you can bring in the ministers, you can bring in those who are going to work with them. We can start to see the framework. The discussion with Labour, they're coming back on June 19 to start to flesh out the framework of what are the things that we require in terms of infrastructure and how do we fund them. But we must, believe me, in my opinion, we must bite that bullet now. And there's no time. Like I say, the right time is today.
All right. I wish we had more time because, you know, you're saying all of these things and I'm thinking, should all of this have been done before the complete removal? I need a short question, a short answer there. I've got like 20 seconds. Should all of this have been done before the removal?
And I would answer that better late than never.
Okay. Uwate Ahimie, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. He is...
thank you for having me.
...a corporate governance, risk management and compliance implementation expert. Spent a lot of years in the oil and gas sector, currently on the editorial board of Naira Metrics. Lagos, let's take a break. When we come back from this break, are we setting men up by teaching them they must be the boss at home?